you know any sketchy kids when you were growing up? Get close to that microphone. You sit too far away. Okay. Is that comfy for you? I want you to be comfortable.
Because this is going to be a rugged interview, yeah. I know.
This is going to be like 60 minutes.
This is, yeah.
You're going to leave the room crying when I get done with you. You never want to
an
step
expose
back.
Expose of something.
Did you ever have a sketchy kid when you were growing up? You ever know somebody who was a kid? He got stuff. You don't know how he got it, but he got it. You ever know those? I knew somebody similar to that. It was like, he always seemed to get stuff. Uh-huh. You know, he always had stuff, and you didn't ask how he got it.
And he made sure he had the right friends.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's like got somebody like that in school. Carol Gianforte is here now. She's not here with Jim Basir today. We're not talking about the history of Racine. We're talking about the history of Carol. She wrote a book, My Heart Leads Me Home, A Daughter's Memoir. I learned one thing right off the cover. Your middle name is Burrow?
That was my maiden name.
Oh, that's your maiden name. I thought it was your middle name.
Uh-huh.
Carol Burrow. Oh, so that was Gianforte's your married name. And that's a picture of you and your dad on the cover.
That is.
And that was taken right here in Racine on Carlisle Avenue.
1418.
1418 uh-huh. Carlisle. The house is still there. I did something stupid. I'll talk about it in a minute. But you wrote this book. What made you write a book about your life growing up in Racine? Because you're a local yokel. You're from Racine. Mm-hmm. And what made you write a book about it?
It was a slow process, Don, so I'll just touch on some of it. It really started probably in my mind of just being sentimental about my parents. Another sentimental thing was that 1418 Carlisle. That was the only home my parents ever owned. I grew up in that home. And for 45 years, it was like a character in the book, practically.
It was.
Our home, yeah. But I think coming back to Racine in retirement, my husband and I met in high school. But we raised our daughter, lived elsewhere, but we raised our daughter due to my dear girlfriend who had moved to West Bend, Wisconsin.
Whoa!
We were way over there. So we raised our daughter, Lisa, in West Bend, and then retirement was coming, and so we chose to come back to Racine. And it wasn't like, oh, we can't wait to get home to our hometown. My husband's parents were still fine, but maybe needed future help. So the coming back to Racine does figure into writing this book, because even though West Bend was 45 minutes away, so we did visit Racine. But it was very different to buy a condo and to think now we are in Racine for a good amount of the time, plus Arizona. And so it was, believe it or not, like an adventure. And maybe some people, like, they move away there in California and they think, oh, would I ever move back to Racine? I would never do that. You know, so here we were. And it was very adventurous.
But you didn't get this house back.
No, but thank goodness I know who owns it, and I'm thrilled about that.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So coming back with a storehouse of memories of my parents and being in Racine, that catapulted me in. But there was one event with the Racine Journal Times. Should I go into that now?
Whatever you want.
Well, coming back, my husband and I came upon this idea. My dad had loved playing as a hobby in the Racine band, the city band. And so those musicians, at least at the time, were paid. And so my husband and I thought for the second summer here, we will provide that concert for the band on their schedule. Well, this was about 20 years ago. And so I had to go down. I went down in person to the Journal Times with a letter to the editor. And it said that due to our coming back, we were going to provide this concert. And please come. It was over the 4th of July time. So the woman says to me, but your mailing address is Arizona. And I said, yes. And she said, well, you know, we're going to do a feature on people that keep their ties to Racine. Do you want to write something? Now, isn't this amazing? So I went home, and I don't know, maybe for a week, I worked on this story, and it was called You Can Go Home Again. And I didn't know it was even in the paper. And then people started tracking me down. I liked your story today. That's how this all began. Then the stories, I went back to the Journal Times, offered my services free of charge, and started being accepted several times a year. And then that became a collection for a book.
And that's how the book got started.
Mm-hmm.
Now, It's tough to ask people their age, but I'm going to have to do it in a sort of way. What year were you born in Racine? What year are we talking about?
1947.
No, 1947. That's not too old.
Well, when I think I'm getting close to 80, I can't believe
it. I'm only kidding. No. So this is basically growing up in the 50s.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So 1950s
and 60s. I graduated from Horlick in 66.
All right, but
so you throw in those teen years, those crazy teen years. But
you write a lot about your neighbors coming in. See, when I grew up too, my neighbors were. They were there from the day I moved into the house to the day I moved out. All my neighbors, except for one house next to me, they had several people come and go. It just was one of those, one of those things. Mm-hmm. But you write about your friends, and then they eventually have to leave. Yeah. And so, why don't you talk about some of your friends who live next door to you?
Well, that was in the era where, for so many of us, people didn't move often. And on Carlisle, the 1400 block, there were grandparents owning the houses. With the young families living above, that was a wonderful development. But then the young families eventually moved away. But we knew everybody on that side of Carlisle. Now, what is interesting is, as a young child, Carlisle has a boulevard down the middle. We didn't know that many people across the boulevard. As a young child, that was way over there, across the boulevard. But on our side of Carlisle, so I know you and your wife have read the book, and that's such an honor for me.
Every page.
I know you have, and I'm thrilled about that. So one of the people that lived next door, Philip and Jeanette Weiler, that was such a blow. We got along so well with this young couple, because my parents were older. My mother married when she was 42 years old. So here came Philip and Jeanette as a second generation into that block. And it's magical sometimes with neighbors. You're like meant to be. And then when I think I was in sixth grade, out of the blue, they announced that they were moving and they were going to Arizona. And we were heartsick. And Arizona, I mean, this was not back to Burlington where they were from. But what was so wonderful was my father especially stayed in touch with them. And Christmas and New Year's, he would always call them. And they would laugh at his jokes. But then my husband and I were in Arizona. And I was able to keep that friendship in their last years. And my book shows pictures of when they left Carlisle Avenue and a picture of Jeanette. When she was a widow, I was visiting her in her facility. So they became lifelong friends. But yes, there were the wonderful times and the sad times.
You know, it's funny. I say I read the book. I didn't read it. My wife read it to me.
I think that's so unusual and so great.
She should do like audiobooks. She reads them so well. She never flubs on a word. She just keeps going and going and going. Huh. And I could picture stuff when she's reading it because she's such a great reader. So she reads all these books to me. Mm-hmm. And yours was the first book. Now we're working on a different book. But we're going to talk about some of the places you went to in Racine. And my wife and I retraced that route because I didn't know what you were talking about. So we actually got up one day. And we said, we're going to start at her house, and we're going to trace her walk down the block, down the hill, to the parks.
I love this.
Yeah, so we're going to do that. Carol Gianforte is my guest. She wrote her book, My Heart Leads Me Home, a daughter's memoir about growing up in Racine. I guess everybody's got a book in them, huh?
I think they do. It's just the problem of sitting down and writing one.
And you have to know, you have to know how to put a book together.
That's true.
It's not easy to know how. Yeah. First of all, your grammar has got to be perfect because everyone's going to pick it apart if it's not. Did you have an editor?
I certainly did. Yeah. And I want to give her credit.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because after having stories in the Journal Times, I got an email from Genevieve Sesto. And I'd heard about her, quality person, an author herself. And she wrote and said she had been following my stories and would love to have coffee. And that led to her just gently saying, I could help you put these together. And then I thought that an editor maybe meant scratching everything out. And then you'd have to, it'd be terrible. But it wasn't like that at all. She
helped you tell the story.
She changed hardly anything.
Yeah.
But she guided me, and then to how to get something published. My confidence about getting an agent, I mean, I never did make it to the New York Times bestseller list. It didn't make it down. So
you made it to the Penny Saver bestsellers list.
So I just knew from the beginning, not necessarily what she said, but self-publishing. I would self-publish this. But you still need to go to the Library of Congress. You have to get the price because you want it in bookstores. You want it on Amazon. So there is guidance needed. But you can self-publish. But you do need an editor to make things look better.
And they have to go over it. Grammar's got to be correct.
Yeah.
Punctuation's got to be correct.
I never did learn who and whom or anything like that. I turned that over.
It's to whom it belongs. It's who it belongs to, but it's to whom it belongs. You have to know how to put them in the order so it makes sense.
She was marvelous.
Yeah,
it's got to make sense. And one thing that I'm so grateful for, as we got into this, and she was very laid back and gentle, but she said, but Carol, this should be a quality book. And what did she mean by that? Yes, written well, correct grammar, done with in a conscientious way. And I'm so glad of that because any one of us can publish anything, even with misspellings. And that, in a way, is wonderful. Self-publish. But I'm glad. I do believe this became a quality book because of
it
Genevieve.
It is. I will say it's a quality book.
Well, thank you, Don.
It is. And I don't read many books. Again, my wife read it to me. I consider me reading the book. Then.
Yes.
But it is. I didn't grow up here. People know that by listening to me. I didn't grow up anywhere near here. But it made me think about growing up where I did grow up.
Yes.
And I lived in the house from when I was just about 2 years old up until my mid-20s. I lived in the same house.
Mm-hmm. So Same thing. The house is a character.
Yeah, everything. And most of my friends are gone. But I did have one kid I grew up with from a little boy up until my 20s. And I just spoke to him the other day.
Excellent.
Again.
What's his first name?
His name was Johnny Karras. I think he lives in New Jersey now. But he lived at his parents' house. They passed away. All the parents are gone.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, a lot of the kids I hung around with, they're all gone too. Mm-hmm. Which is... That is sad
because you're younger than I am. You're a kid.
Yeah.
I consider you a
kid.
But
these kids were all 2 years older than me. I was the youngest of the group.
They're still younger than I am.
Yeah. There are different reasons why they passed away.
Yeah.
But they did. So Johnny and I, out of the six
core group,
we're the last two standing.
Yeah.
And we're both doing fine. And he just sold his parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
And his sisters, I think, live in Florida or somewhere down there. I think one lives in New Jersey and he lives in New Jersey too.
Well, I was going to tell you before you had a break and now to continue, I was telling you about Philip and Jeanette because you were saying we knew people on the block. And so... This collection of stories, it doesn't go in chronological order. It doesn't start out, I was born on such and such a date. It's more just vignettes about important people or things that happened to me. And I can report that one character in the book, Gary Larson, who was a teen when I was in grade school.
I think I know him.
He's in Florida now.
Oh, and I don't know him.
Okay. Well, he was just... full of antics, and our quiet house needed something like that. And he and my dad bonded on looking at cars, buying cars, although he had a fine set of parents. Well, anyway, one time Gary climbed our TV tower.
That was in the book. I read that. Yeah.
And suddenly, he walked through the upstairs quietly, and he appeared in the kitchen. And my gentle mother, we looked at him. I was there, too. And she said, you have to leave the way you came.
By the way.
And we are still in touch.
In just a moment, we're going to talk about how you got your first TV. Not everybody, you know, kids growing up today say, well, everybody's got a TV. But everybody didn't have a TV back when you were growing up.
Right.
And your father went halfway across the planet to go get a television. At least it sounds like that to be in the book. He just went to
Jefferson, Wisconsin. You know, that was the technological capital of the world.
Anyway, we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about how my wife and I retraced her roots. We retraced her little pathways when she used to go with her friends. Even went to your old friend's house. Mm. Probably called the police on us. Got people staring at our house. Anyway, so we'll talk more with Carol Gianforte. She wrote the book, My Heart Leads Me Home, a daughter's memoir. And we'll tell you how you can get the book at the end of the show in case you want to buy a copy.
Don Rosen.
WRJN. talking to Carol Gianforte. She wrote the book, My Heart Leads Me Home, part of our new author series, where we're talking to local authors, actually, not new authors, but local authors in Racine. She wrote the book. When did you write it, by the way?
9 years ago.
9 years ago. We're just
so would you
to
call
it
this a classic now if I sell one or two copies? Has it survived? Is it a classic?
Well, luckily, you don't have to, you know, some people do that for their main living, and they've got to sell a million copies to be on the New York Times bestseller list. You wrote it because you wanted to write it, and anybody who reads it, like we did, just gets the benefit from it.
My husband and I were going to move to a mansion. That was our original thought.
Based on that book?
Yes. We're still at the same local address. But it has sold a couple thousand copies.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
And go ahead.
I wanted to talk to you, because I don't want to run out of time before I get to these topics. In the book, back in the 50s, not everybody had a television set. Mm-hmm. But your dad said he didn't want a TV at first, right?
My parents worked too hard. They read books. They looked up words in dictionaries. They were very studious. And they weren't on a soap opera, a soapbox about televisions were terrible. But I was brokenhearted. But they let me go to the neighbors to watch Disneyland once a week. But I had no hope. So we spent a lot of time in Jefferson County. Jefferson and the county where my dad had grown up. Relatives, friends, business people from my dad. And so it was always a treat for me to go out to Jefferson with my parents or with him. So, yes, I went to Jefferson alone with my dad on a Saturday. And we went to the Milky Way restaurant, which had, of course, in memory, the best malted milks possible in the entire world. But next door to it was a storefront, you know, about the size of 10 feet wide, called the Jefferson Radio and TV Clinic. And the man that ran it had been a big high school star in Jefferson, younger than my dad, though. His nickname was Moose. So my dad said...
Every high school's got a guy named Moose.
So my dad said... Moose was a big technological expert, you know. So my dad said, let's go in here. And he said to Moose, I think Carol should have a television. I think we're here to buy a television. And I almost died. But anyway, Jefferson was the capital of the world for TV buyers. So Moose drove all the way to Racine to check out what we would need. And that led to the TV tower that Gary Larson climbed up and down.
Which is still there, I think. Is it still there?
I know the house and I know the owner. I don't think it's there.
Well, I snuck onto the property a little bit.
Maybe it is. Maybe it is there.
I'll go back and take a check.
Me too. I got to
look. You know
what,
though? I'd have a picture of your house. You keep talking. I'll bring up the picture.
Well, we touched on each chapter is a vignette. It does not go from birth to middle age or anything. But other neighbors that have a chapter, Colleen Cox. I read to her on our front porches. And years later, we reconnected. Colleen was in Chicago. She's back in Racine.
At your house?
Yes.
Right,
and I don't see a tower.
Well, you got different pictures. Go ahead. Keep talking.
So Colleen and I are just close friends with a sister of hers, too. Joe and May Arnone live next door to us. Long deceased, but I'm still in touch with Lou, their son, and Joan, and Dave and Nan. They're the next generation. And Jackie Olson, where I went to see Disneyland, Jackie Olson, she's in Florida. And we talk on a regular basis, a few times a year. So those neighbor chapters and neighbor people live on. But what has been contained, you know, was the growing up stories together. But I think, too, you were saying, does everybody have a book in them? And so many people say to me, my family wants me to write one. Well, when I began this, or even when it first came out, I was self-conscious. Who do I think I am that my stories should be put into a book? It sounds very self-serving. But the wonderful thing that I found with this nostalgia is if I would be giving a talk about the book, maybe reading a chapter or two, people would stay after, they'd linger, and they'd say, you know, your chapter on so-and-so reminds me. And they would tell me their story.
Well, yeah, it reminds me of growing up.
That's the gift.
I mean, everybody grew up basically the same way you did. Mm-hmm. Well, not everybody. People had harder
same
times.
Same era.
Some people had bad parents, and they grew up poorly. Let's talk about my wife and I retraced your route in the book. You talked about going down, walking down the block. Mm-hmm. Let's start at the house. You walked down the block. There was school.
Yes, this began at Lincoln School.
Okay, Lincoln School.
I got an invitation from the new girl. There was a new girl in third grade. And a few weeks went by. We liked each other. And her mother wrote an invitation to my mother that I should come for lunch on a Wednesday. So it was so exciting. So we started at Lincoln School. But, you know, Carlisle Avenue was on one side of Lincoln School. So I followed Andrea. We went across State Street.
Now, there was a grocery store there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Lincoln Super.
Is it still there?
The building is in. It still says Lincoln Super, and it's been empty for 50 years.
But we did see that.
Yeah.
And then you went down the road to a stairway that led down.
This was so fascinating. The chapter is called Walking Through My World, and it takes us from the first invitation. Now we're leaving school for lunch because we went home for lunch. Here I am in an entirely different world. Carlisle was one straight street.
Four blocks away, by the way.
Yeah, Carlisle was one straight street. Summit that paralleled it, Blake that paralleled, a straight street. This was an angle and little dead ends and almost topsy-turvy.
Now give us so people know what we're talking about here. It's at the corner of Carlisle and State Street, did you say? What's the cross street?
Well, it's State and Harriet or State and Prospect. You can take either one.
Okay. But we come to the... You had to go down these stairways.
Well, I'll tell you. Okay, so I'm following Andrea.
Okay.
And looking at all this, it was amazing. And I felt so important because I was a guest. I mean, this was a big deal to me. So we get to this yellow brick three-story building right in the middle of the houses. And I found out later it had to do with Lincoln Lutheran Home. But what we did was right next to this kind of closed up brick big building was you could just make out some handles because there was a woods right there in the block. So we start down. There were like 100 steps down through the woods, cement with a railing, hidden. I couldn't get over this. So we get down to the bottom, and now we're in the sun, and there was the Root River and a little white footbridge crossing this narrow part. And across the footbridge was her beautiful white colonial house.
Now, to give people an idea of where it is, if you know where Lutheran High School is, it's right across the street and down a half a block.
Yeah.
It's right across Lutheran High School.
Yes.
And down about it. You can see it from
Spring Lutheran
Street,
High School.
From Spring Street,
a white Dutch colonial kind of house.
So my wife and I, we found the steps, but you can't go down them now because at the end there's a gate and it's blocked off because it's nature took it back. So we went around to where the actual gate is down below. The footbridge you took is gone.
Oh, yeah. It's gone.
That's long gone. But the actual path you took to get to the White House, we could see it from that point.
Yeah.
So we followed your path to this White House. Now, you look at it today, and you go by car, it's not that big a deal. But how old were you? Third grade. So that's what, six, seven, first
grade. Eight years old, maybe.
Yeah, 8, 9 years old.
Yeah.
It must have been like a million miles away.
It was like walking through my world. It was like into another world.
And to read this in the book is really... It's the way you tell it, it seems like you're in the enchanted forest, but you're not. You're right across from Lutheran High School.
It just shows how experiences for a child can be so magnified, so brand new, so unexpected. And that certainly was the case. And then we got to her house, and my mother's rarely worked. And they had house dresses on. And Andrea's mother was all dressed up. They'd come from New Jersey. So anyway, so we go in there. And then she doesn't mind. She served us a thing called Welsh rarebit.
Now, okay. Now, based on reading that in the book, my wife and I brought up an old Gomer Pyle episode.
Oh, really?
Where Gomer Pyle goes to a restaurant and eats Welsh rarebit. And the legend is it gives you horrible nightmares, Welsh rarebit. And it's like a cheese type of
thing.
It
gave me a terrible stomach ache.
Okay, it's like a cheesy thing. Now, based on reading that, I have the Gomer Pyle episode.
Yeah.
And I brought it up, and we watched it based on Welsh rarebit. My wife said, we've got to make that sometime.
Oh, this is amazing.
And in the Gomer Pyle episode, Sergeant Carter followed Gomer, and he had the Welsh rarebit, too. And they both had a nightmare, and they come out, and Gomer became screaming like Sergeant Carter would scream. And Sergeant Carter was like subservient, like Gomer. Yes, I'll follow. Yes, I'm sorry, Sergeant. That's Gomer. And so we want to try, based on this story, Welsh rarebit, based on Gomer Pyle.
It led to a lot of things.
We got to try Welsh rarebit now. Do restaurants even serve that?
I don't know, because it's not something I would order.
Yeah, it's not Welsh rabbit. It's rarebit.
Right.
And but people say, oh, it's Welsh rabbit. No, it's not a rabbit. It's a cheese.
Well, what I try to do in the book, though, I hope it's not too serious, too sentimental, but I try to find meaning in these episodes. Or think, like with Gary Larson and the Crazy Antics, thanking him for bringing fun into our serious house. And this episode of being this guest, I say it really did last for me with more confidence about being a guest and being invited places. It really was a growing up experience for me, and it never quite left me. So this was in the newspaper, and then I say, sadly, we lost touch. It was just a short time later that the Richardsons moved away again, and we lost touch, and someone found her who was a reader of the paper, and we've reconnected, and we have met. And we now send Christmas cards. And I think she was shocked that this meant so much to me. But it warranted an entire chapter of growing up.
And you write some sad stuff in there. One of your friends went to Arizona. Didn't they lose their son?
That was Philip and
Jeanette. That was her. Okay. Yeah,
they ended up with one child who passed away.
That's a horrible thing to lose a child.
Yeah.
My brother lost two children. And it's very difficult. It's not like losing a parent, because that's the natural order of things.
Yeah.
When you lose a child, it's not the order, and your mind has trouble dealing with
it.
And,
you know, going back to them, when I would visit Jeanette, as I was mentioning, Philip had then passed away, and there's pictures in the book where I'm with Jeanette, at least one picture in her facility. She was still so gentle and composed. And we would talk about her sorrows. But she would say, Carol, you know, the world does not stop for us. It goes on, and we have to go on with it. So here was, again, hoping to introduce some deeper meaning to simply writing anecdotes. She was a great, great role model. There we are.
You and Jeanette in that picture.
Mm-hmm.
The book's got some of your pictures in here, too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Ryle, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was it a farm out there you went to visit? You had relatives who lived out in Ryo. Mm-hmm. Ryo is like halfway between here and Wisconsin Dells.
Mm-hmm.
Give you an idea where. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Well, this chapter that is called The Christmas Cactus. And my mother had grown up in Ryo. My mother was born in 1903.
And it's not pronounced Rio, like Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah, you would think so.
It's Ryo.
Ryo. Yeah. Well, and my father, who never drove more than 45 miles an hour, I don't know how we ever got to Ryle. But we would go once in the summer, and for sure many Christmases. So I write about the home that my mother grew up in. She and her two siblings just loved their mother, who had come at 17 from Norway, all alone, braved the voyage with no trouble, married, and then my mother's father died of appendicitis, that dread appendicitis, when my mother was 3. So they had a farm, but they kept that and moved into town. And when you passed this house on the street, you know, it was a typical Midwestern Queen Anne kind of house. No mansion. There were a few mansions in Ryle, but it was big enough to have 2 hidden staircases. They would be you know, you might have a grand staircase where you can see it. So these were hidden. You opened up a door in the master bedroom, or you opened up a door in the parlor, and each had a staircase to the upstairs. Well, it was such a beautiful house because my aunt and uncle Andrew and Elva, they were very stately, remarkable, kind, educated people. They were. I had them on a pedestal. They had been to Norway. They spoke in Norwegian. They were both 100% Norwegian. And so it would be so fun for me. Their sons were older, so they were often on Christmas gone, like in the armed services. So my Aunt Elva would say, Carol, you can explore. So I would take one hidden staircase up, come down the other one, and I would see all these artifacts. You know, the trunks from Norway. The stereopticon, where you put the postcard into
had that on the table.
Yeah. And when I would come down the second hidden staircase, I would end up in their parlor. And I never could figure it out because there was this enormous plant in that parlor. And my grandmother had it. It was called the Christmas cactus. And so it kind of bothered me. Why would that be a cactus? Well, the years went by. Andrew and Elva had to leave the house with old age. My grandmother had died. The Christmas cactus came to Racine. Now it became quite the heirloom, because how old was this? And this is all in the story, this tracing of the history. And then my parents died. So I very carefully took this Christmas cactus to West Bend. And it was the first Christmas without them. Now this Christmas cactus, you know, most of you know what it is, drooping kind of a chain of leaves. And I never saw anything unusual about it. I thought it was kind of unattractive. Well, that first Christmas, I was walking through our living room in West Bend where I had placed this family heirloom, and I stopped. I thought, did I see something? There was one blossom. And so I felt, again, introducing meaning into these anecdote type of stories, I felt that my mother was there. So we had that Christmas cactus, and there's a poor picture of it, but a picture of it in the book. And long after the book was written, we lost the Christmas cactus.
Oh.
That is bad. I was so superstitious by that time that I thought it's got to last another 100 years or there's going to be bad luck. And we tried very hard with nurseries and all this, but yeah,
there's a picture of it.
Yeah, we lost the Christmas.
It doesn't look like a cactus from Arizona.
No.
It doesn't look anything like that.
There's drooping leaves.
A lot of droopy leaves on it.
Yes. Well, so some people have told me that is their favorite story in the book, the Christmas cactus.
Mine is just when you travel the streets to get down to your friend's house. As a matter of fact, we couldn't find something, and I called Carol when my wife and I were in the car. We can't. Could you get over here and you have to get to take your husband to the train station or something?
Yes, that's right.
And you said, I'll be right over there in a few minutes. I said, you got to show us where this path is, because we're stuck halfway between, because we followed your journey.
Well,
we were stuck.
After that, Don, I thought to myself, if I only write one book in 10 years, I don't think I can become a mystery author. But that is like a mystery.
It is, because we were looking for the path.
It's like a mystery.
And we found the steps, but they're so overgrown with vegetation, mm-hmm. we didn't know we were standing mm-hmm. in front of it. Mm-hmm. And then we found the gate. It's locked up because I don't want people getting hurt.
Yep.
But that's, and then the actual footbridge is gone too.
Yeah.
So we did find the park.
It was like a fairy tale.
We did find the park nearby. There was a footbridge there. And I said, I don't think that's what she's talking about.
No, it was a little white wooden footbridge.
They have one there, but it's not the same
one. Yeah. Now, I want to also say, we're running out of time here. As I was writing this, for me, finding a title was next to impossible. And so with friends that I would have coffee with now and then, they asked, well, how's it coming? And I must have said, well, what do you think about a couple of title ideas? And it was silent. And then my friend Tony, Chris Savaglio, said, well, how about My Heart Leads Me Home? So Tony is responsible for what I think is a beautiful title.
I just saw her last night, too, at church. She mentioned it. We mentioned you were going to be on this morning.
So it's a very sentimental journey. And now, Don, I am, after 9 years, on my Christian counter right now.
Book number two.
I think it might be. Can you believe that? A book for Christmas, if I can have it ready for next year. And along those lines, Jim Rossier, who you're so kind to us about our reminiscing, he has said, if I get that book done, when he does his museum tour next year at the business
center. You'll
be center,
able to sign books?
I'll be able, but, and then he backtracked and said, he's inviting me for this year with my
He mentioned that book. Right, yeah.
And another friend, Doug Chaussee, a friend of his. So we're horning in on the museum tour.
So when are you going to do the audiobook for this? Actually read the book into like
Can
a podcast?
Can you help me do that? I never did.
You just have to read it into a microphone. There's nothing more to it than that. I've listened to Jerry Seinfeld. We listened to one of his audiobooks when we traveled.
I actually would like to do that.
Yeah, you just have to sit in front of a microphone. You can do it at home.
But then who's going to listen to it other than
Well, then you.
You
market it like a book. It's the audiobook version, and you sell it on Amazon just like you sell this book. And by the way, let's talk about that. If somebody wants to get a copy of the book, how can they, other than having to know you and get a free one, if they want to really pay for one, how do they go about doing it?
It's on Amazon.
Amazon
and
Books.
And also, Barnes & Noble carried it for a long time under biographies, but they don't have it anymore, but they would order it. It's definitely still in print.
Let's look on Amazon just to make sure, because I have an Amazon.
Okay, double check.
Amazon thing here, and Amazon's all ready for Black Friday. My Heart Leads Me Home, Carol Gianforte.
It better
come
up. Oh,
look at this. They're making the movie come out.
Isn't that something? Am I starring in it?
Oh, it doesn't spell right here. Hold on a second here. It's got you spelled with a K, and
it's suspense.
Yeah, hold on.
I better be there.
Well, hold on.
You know what? Because I get a lot of royalties from that. I get like $2 or $3 a month.